We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
Everyone, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is a perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll be able to get your show pushed on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms.
And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for the episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here, solo today. The old man Andreas Hale is not in the building. He was a little busy, and instead of us going the entire week without a show, I decided to jump on, do another solo show. These are always fun. You know craziness is about to happen. So you guys are stuck with me for the next hour. We're talking pro wrestling on this show. We're going to preview AEW Revolution later on. We're going to talk about Bobby Lashley only becoming the third black WWE champion of all time as well. Plus a bunch of other fun stuff in the second and third segment. But first, this week, I want to start the segment off with hip-hop. And you may think, like, yo, Kel, you're going to talk hip-hop by yourself? Are you crazy? Like, no, I am not crazy. I decided, since the old man Andreas Hale could not be here, I searched, and I found a young man. A man who looks younger than me, according to all accounts. I dialed the phone, boop, 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 real quick. I was like, yo, Pops, I need you. And my pops said, you know what? You need me? I got you. So on the line, I got my pops, same name, of course, because I am a junior. So this is Kel Dansby Sr., but Pops is okay. You know, we're just rolling with that. Pops is in the building. Pops, thanks for joining me.
Well, since we're talking hip-hop, let me go by the stage name. This is Skills the Public Speaker. So, you know, this ain't your dad talking. This is Skills the Public. 9-3 Sour Face, hip-hop's greatest.
You got to have people YouTube and Sour Face.
Yeah.
Shout out to the movement.
That's right.
So, no one better to chop it up with. Plus, I always like talking to you. Pops, we have these discussions anyway, just on the phone for hours. So it's dope to just have it on the show, open a show, especially when I think this is probably our fifth episode straight talking hip-hop. Maybe one, like, we nerded out. and talked about like Marvel, but this is a lot of hip hop we've been using to open up the show. So it's dope to get you on here. You're always opinionated. You were in the midst of it. You were there. Boots to the ground. You almost named me Laquan due to a crazy era of New York hip hop. So I understand this. It was great to bring you on. So the first thing I wanted to touch on is we had another Versus this week, and this one was weird because it was D'Angelo and friends. It was at the Apollo. Shout out to the fam. Shout out to Harlem. Everyone. 116th. Shout out to Lennox.
Foster Kingdom.
Everything. You know, gang gang. Cousin L. So they were in Harlem for it, and I was like, all right, cool. D'Angelo comes out. What? Well, I'm going to tell this story in reverse. D'Angelo ends up being there, and he was like, the friends are y'all, the listeners. And it was just him. It was like a concert. He brought out Red. He brought out Meth at one point. Cool, whatever. I wasn't really down for 2 hours of D'Angelo. Like, I needed, like, when you say friends, just go D'Angelo versus Neo Soul. Like, bring out Erica for a track. Bring out Jill for one track. Bring out Maxwell for a couple joints. Like, give me that. Like, maybe you don't need you versus your 20 versus 20 Maxwell, but give me like you versus four Maxwell. Then give me you versus the next for four. Like, you know, give me that performing back and forth. That's not what we got. So at that point, whatever, I was kind of done with his portion of it. The portion that sticks out to me is the first hour, because he was late, because we can't be nowhere on time. The first hour and 15 minutes was straight DJ set by DJ Scratch. And people, 80% of Twitter is just like, yo, this DJ is dope.
And like people had never heard of him before.
They had never heard of DJ Scratch before. Ever. And they were just like, yo, this guy's pretty good. And I was just like, I was just sitting there just wide mouth, like, yo, are you kidding me? So people are losing their minds because this is the first time they hear real transitions. Like, not a playlist, not just like, yo, we got this and it goes to the, no, he's mixing, he's scratching, yeah, everything. He was in the mix. Perfect. Going from this genre to that genre, talking over it, like, oh, he plays the sample for this track here. Oh, we taking it back, blah, blah, blah. Like, given the little, you know, being
he
a DJ.
New York to it, yeah.
Yeah, being a DJ, and people were shocked. And that's why I'm glad I have you here, is when did that die? Because you seen it from the beginning. Let's take, we could take it back. Before we talk about when it died, let's take it back.
Now, when you talking about the in the club DJ or the hip-hop DJ?
I would say the hip-hop DJ. I think I know when it died, but I feel like you can pinpoint that more.
The last DJ that I honestly can say, besides, like, you know, Tribe, De La, is what was his name? Evil D with Black Moon.
Okay.
So Black Moon was kinda the last time where you got cuts on your record, and it was still more moving forward, but as far as like continuously, like
you wouldn't put Primo there? You wouldn't put Primo there.
Primo stands up. That's it. That's Primo, though. So Primo keeps it alive. Like, you can't get a Primo track without him doing cuts. However, the Primo cuts was a little different than, let's say, Evil D or even EPMDs or even De La, where you would just get live cuts and scratches, where Primo would sample your something you did before and drop it in. You know, like, he would kind of take a lot of Guru's older stuff and basically make the hook out of something he already said before, whereas in the original DJ, you just got scratches and mixes and blends with no dialogue, and he wasn't. That's what made Premier different, because he will always scratch like that. So, to answer your question, like, I would say 94 is when hip-hop went left. And I think the DJ got taken out of it in 94.
I would say, yeah, like I was thinking around the same time, and in no disrespectful way at all, but you know when they say like, yo, video killed the radio star, that was the MTV joint. VJs killed the DJ. Once the DJ said, and you have what, like Yo MTV Raps, when they had Ed Lover and Dre on there, right? Like when the DJ said, I can be the guy, I can be the talent, it was over.
Mm-hmm.
It was no more me pairing up with a hip hop artist. For what? I don't need that. And then you get it taken further to where, if you take it as disrespect or no disrespect, I don't care, Funkmaster Flex put the nail in the coffin. Because at that point, he was like, I am the talent. I am larger than life. I'm going to make this about me.
Mm-hmm.
And it never went back.
Yeah, because, but what happened is, and even though people tend to not agree, but hip hop was New York based and driven. So in New York at that time, BLS and Kiss, 98.7 Kiss, stopped doing hip hop. So then all you had was Hot 97. And Flex was the number one DJ at Hot 97, so he had no competition. Prior to that, you had Red Alert on Kiss FM, and then you had on BLS from Queensbridge. And basically what you had was, you had to battle to be on the radio. And then you had Bobbito and Stretch Armstrong that was on the bottom of the dial. But yeah, all of those platforms stopped doing hip hop, and you only have one. So Flex became the quote unquote DJ radio. And then that's when a lot of breaking hip hop stopped. Like, you had platforms where you could have your songs, underground songs, building momentum through the radio, where on Hot 97, you know, you got payola, not can't say payola, but you had certain artists. You had the Bad Boy artists, you had the Rockefeller artists, and then if you wasn't one of those, it was harder to break in. But I would say that Flex technically was the radio version of the Kid Capri. You already had these, but all of them got kind of pushed out because of Flex, and it just became Flex. Flex and Clue was around for a little minute, but Clue was a mixtape DJ. But as far as like radio, that's what happened. So technically, I would say, to answer your question and where you're trying to go with it, that Flex kind of, but he really didn't have effect on the music component though. Because if you notice, in live performances, they still had DJs.
Yeah, but it wasn't.
DJ never wasn't,
it wasn't
on the
their,
wax no more.
Yeah, it wasn't their DJ necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. It wasn't EPMD. You know, it wasn't Eric B and Rakim. Like, it wasn't like, okay, this is necessarily my DJ. We've seen now some DJs technically keep it alive as producers. Like Ninth Wonder is the DJ for Lil Brother, and he's always been part of Lil Brother. I think they recently broke up, but nonetheless. But people know Ninth as a producer for everyone. So it's like you can't do one without the other. No more. Like you have to do a little bit of everything. Like you just can't produce for your crew. And then outside of that, not many of those DJs are just going and spinning sets. Like, you're not doing anything without your crew. If you ain't on tour with your crew, you ain't just out there spinning sets. So people are like, yo, DJ Scratch, like, this is amazing. Because they don't hear real people spinning anymore. Like, no one goes out there and just spins.
But look at D-Nice. D-Nice is still spinning. And D-Nice was a MC with KRS-One. But he was always DJ. He was D-Nice. And then he went into the true 100% DJ component of his career, because it was better than him as an MC. But even back then, the majority of the producers were DJs, because they was finding the break, they was finding the loops, And then they started becoming, okay, we're a group, but my job is to do the beats, more so than an MC, kind of like the RZA, where he was a DJ, first and foremost, you know what I mean? So you, those now, so right now they probably are still, the art of club music and the DJ talking on top of it, like you said, he was in the mix, that art is it's a New York-based thing. And then normally when you get it in New York City, you're going to get it in the older dudes club. You're going to get the Boosie B's of the world. You know what I'm saying? You're going to get them. And Capri, Kid Capri still rocks, but those are like a plus 40-year-old crowd type now.
Which is crazy because EDM does it for 18-year-olds and they love it. Like EDM is just the DJ talking over stuff and then dropping the beat. Like it's a model that still works. Just not in hip hop. Like, no. So, I mean, kids are amazed on verses now when they like see this and they're like, yo, DJ Scratch is so dope. And, you know, you look at that and it's like verses has kind of at least opened these youngsters' eyes to it a little bit. So hopefully it makes a resurgence. Like, it'd be dope for kids to be like, yo, I want to be a DJ again, you know, like to bring it back. What's some of the, who's the best you've seen spin?
Best DJ I've ever seen spin?
Yeah. Like if you had to choose, like one thing that sticks out to me, I'd say I was like 19. I knew the host at this club out here in Vegas. It used to be in the Venetian. I don't remember what it was. And Kid Capri was spinning one night. I was 19. And I went to just listen to Capri spin. And he let me in because he got me in, me and my boy in, because there was like a group of girls and they do like girl bottle service or whatever and you get free tables. So he snuck us in with that group. And nobody on inside cared because be like, yo, we need girls like to do the ratio. So the ratio was like 12 girls to two of us. So they were like, yeah, nah, no problem. Come in. They didn't even card. But yeah, I had like one drink. I wasn't even drinking crazy. I just went and I spent 4 hours at a club listening to Capri spin. And he just crushed that set. One of the best I heard. And shout out to Mecca from Two Dope Boys, who was at Wale Mania in New York, I think, and did this set that was just incredible.
There. I mean, if you had to ask me, I would say Capri. I would say Kid Capri. Now, you saying, okay, because Kid Capri's now Brucey B's, you know, that's like family. So Bruce would be mad and be like Capri, but Capri's better than Bruce. Like, Bruce, my man, like, DJ Osmonic still opens for Bruce, like, you know what I'm saying? But when it comes to talking and keeping a party going, Bruce and Brucey B and Kid Capri is right there. As far as a person getting in the mix, and I was in a club, the Roombas in the Bronx, which is it was the Disco Fever, then it turned to Roombas. And DJ Carmelo killed it one night, like Ted Smooth. Like that to me was probably, and this was the late 90s. So you want to go 97-ish to like 2002 when Roombas was really popping. And then you had Flex was there on Monday nights. You had Carmelo, you had Ted Smooth, you had Brucey B. And that was your Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday DJs. And it was bananas. So now watching them nightly, I would say Carmelo's underrated because he only says DJ Carmelo. That's all he says. But in the mix, he was really good in the mix. But as far as talking is concerned, Bruce and Kid Capri. And growing up hip-hop, I saw Kid Capri's whole style was with DJ Starchild, who passed away in Starchild. If you hear Capri, it's DJ Starchild. Because Capri was holding Starchild's records. So when they would do shows, Capri would carry the crates. That was how you came up as a DJ, which is weird. Like, I'm not sure if you watched The Get Down. The Get Up.
Yeah.
Right? The Get Up. The Get Down, yeah. The Get Down. It's The Get Down, right? And it's so accurate, even though it's not, it's based on true events. But DJs back then, you would have to say, so I'm the father, right? I'm Kel Senior. Kell Jr. would carry the crates when I did a show. And then all of a sudden, now I retire, I'm out the loop, and then you become the star. Or you just became the star and pushed me to the side. So, yeah, but that's what Kid Capri did with Star Child. But, yeah, so right now, if I had to pay my last dollar to watch a DJ spin, I'm watching Kid Capri.
Yeah, I think Capri is the total, kind of the total package there. I mean, watching Primo spin is dope. You know, because he just spins his records. Like, watch, I saw Just Blaze set at a Vegas festival. That was just crazy. Because he really just had to play his catalog. Like, he played a little bit here and there. But it's really just his beats. So it's incredible to just hear him spin. Like, yo, you got hits. But just hear everyone, like you say, just in the mix. Yeah, man, my dude Mecca from Two Dope Boys. And Mech does shows for a ton of people. He did this set for Wale Mania at WrestleMania week where every track was fed into, no, it came out of every track, ended up the sample that it came from.
Mm.
So when you have like The Bridge Is Over, like you found like a new song and then it was like just a hint of it and then boom, he went right into The Bridge Is Over perfectly. And you're like, oh shit, that's the sample. And then like a Jay track, and then right into, and then the Kanye track, and then like the 1970s, like super jazz. And he did that for an hour and a half. Song sample. When I was just like, yo, this is bananas. So
there's a Biggie song that Ashanti did over, and I was with a guy like sister coach of Phoenix College, Mac. He's from Alabama. He had company. I was at his house, and you and Mac's around the same age. So the Biggie song came on, and Ashanti, her version. And so the girl was with us. She was like, "Oh, I never heard." She never heard the Biggie one, so she thought the Ashanti one was the original one. And then he's like, nah, Biggie was the first one. And then I said, no, that's Elder Barge. And they was like, Elder Barge? And I said, I put on the Elder Barge record. And then when it came, I said, wait for the break. Here's the break. Boom. I'm not going to sing it, though, but it was the Biggie version. It was like, and Puff and them just took the whole loop. Like, they didn't change anything. They added maybe a little bass fillers, and but that was it. Then, you know, of course, did the percussion on top of it, but it was the loop. It's funny how this generation isn't aware of that and knowing, because once Fruity Loops came in, I mean, people was playing sounds. They wasn't really sampling. Even though they're still sampling now, it's just that the way a record is mixed, the sample is tucked. If you understand what I'm saying, it's low. It's not prominent in the track.
Yeah.
So it's the vocals are more prominent, so you really don't get the feeling of it. You really can't tell, is that a sample or is that just something somebody played? But I have a question for you regarding DJing. With the way music is now, when you hear a good set, are they playing songs from my era or are they playing songs from today's era? Because today's era, is there in a mix? Because 95% of the songs is going to sound the same from a music perspective, because it's like reggaeton, but hip-hop style. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. It's, I've seen very few, I probably counted on one hand, mixes that are really good current mixes, but I have heard several where it's like, yo. But it comes back to, you can't do any of those without using songs from early 2000s, 90s, 90, like, you know, like, all of those are always mixed in. Like, if you're asking a straight set, like, of new music,
mm-hmm.
no, like, I heard DJ Mustard spin. That's the closest as I've been to new music. But you got to think, like, he has the YG catalog that he did. So that's super West Coast. So he spun West Coast YG, like new YG with Kendrick and all this stuff, like, but it was West. But then he did hits. So he got hits for like a Beyonce track. So then that turned him into like, okay, Beyonce lane. Now he spun a little bit of the new Jay, now some Rihanna, now blah, blah. And then he got hits with an East Coast dude. Like he might do a Rocky track or a Drake track that he got. And then boom, he spins that into the new Drake, and then he's moving around the East. He got a song with Chris Brown that sounds like a down south beat though. So he runs to Chris Brown, and then next thing you know, you go from that to Chris Brown and Future, and then boom, and In and Out. But he used his beats and his music to connect it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only time I've seen it.
He wasn't just going that song to the next song to the next song to the next
it
song.
Had a
couple little cuts.
Yeah,
drop the next song, talk on top, none of that.
No, he had a method to the madness, but his method to the madness was his stuff. Like, I've done so many hits for people, I can take you down my journey and mix in and make it relevant by like geography.
Yeah.
So it made sense.
So technically,
a lot of people don't even try that. They're just like, yo, top 40, this order, done.
See, I was going to just say that. So technically, he was in the mix, but he was doing a show of his own particular music. So he gave you a show. He wasn't just a pure DJ in that sense. But that's what I was going to say. The artistry of DJing and mixing and blending and keeping the crowd rocking is gone because you could just have a computer with a playlist and just hit a button, a button, a button, a button, a button, go to next song, next song. I've been in a couple of clubs where, no rhyme or reason, there's a song that's playing in that 2019 new record, right? And then they'll go to a song from 1995. Like, you can't go from 2019 to 90, and then come back to 27. Like, they're all over the place. It's just like, I'm like, are they DJing blindfolded? There is no cutting. There's nothing, no blending, nothing to do that. But I don't think these kids even party at the club. I mean, I haven't been to a young club in a who knows how long anyway. But do they dance in the club? Do they do anything but play the couch and do they dance anymore?
I don't dance.
I'm just saying, like,
I didn't go to a club.
I know there's girls dancing on top of girls.
Or on top of the section. Like I don't go to a club unless I get a table. So
I mean, me too as well, but even when we had a table, there was people on the dance floor.
Yeah, like I've only seen that at EDM clubs, and they're just rolling all night. So I don't know, like, that's just what they do.
Exactly.
But in hip-hop clubs, I guess the dance floor is packed, but everybody got a drink in their hand. Everybody, honestly, in a club, everyone's just looking at everyone else. So either, either you're on Snapchat or Instagram, looking at your phone, trying to show people that you in the club and dancing. Or you drunk, you pulling people over, they doing shout outs on your IG live.
Yeah.
Or IG stories, whatever it is, on your Snapchat. Or you on the dance floor with your drink. Or if you got a table, you there with your drink, looking cool, and just watching everyone else. There's no rhyme or reason to a club anymore. Yeah. People don't go there to like pull people and hook up, because people have no social skills. So, like, if you ain't hooking up on Tinder or Plenty of Fish or Bumble, you're not hooking up. So, meeting girls at the club, pulling numbers, taking a girl home, like, that ain't happening unless you got paper and you literally just bought her and a friend a bunch of drinks or whatever, and she's coming with you for some money type stuff. But, like, outside of that, like, no one's pulling girls at a club. No one's dancing. There's no dance battles. There's no I dance better than you. Like, there's no clicks like that.
Yeah.
So, like, that's not happening. There's nothing to do at a club. Nothing. Nothing to do there. If I'm there, it's because it's free, and I'm trying to get drunk off of free liquor. Like, that's it. Like, that's my only purpose of being in a club. Like, I go to a club to get drunk, and it's probably the least enjoyable place to get drunk. Hands down, it's the least enjoyable place. I like getting drunk at bars, at home, at people's cribs, at sporting events. The club is the worst place to get drunk.
I feel much better now because you know, I obviously don't go out as much because there was really no reason. So, you know, when I'm in Phoenix, you know, everybody socializes in Scottsdale. So, yeah. You know, 10 years ago, I'm not talking 30, 40, I'm talking about like 8 years ago, 2012, you go to Scottsdale and it be popping in Scottsdale. And then I've been to Scottsdale maybe 2 weeks ago, I mean, before COVID. Let's just say, because COVID shut everything
pre-Rona,
down.
Pre-Rona, yeah.
Pre-Rona, and it still was boring as hell. So I was like, yo, I thought I was too old for the scene. No. And maybe it was something I wasn't understanding. But if you, and it's still your prime, and you saying there's nothing there, I don't feel bad at all now. I feel bad for the culture that they don't know how to just enjoy themselves. Yo. It's all about the front. It's all about I'm fronting. I'm fronting. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Like, nah, you ain't enjoying yourself because after you're going back to who knows what.
So the funniest thing to do, I don't have Snapchat, but I see it on IG stories. The funniest thing to do is, like, they'll put your location, and you can see other people's stories, like, in your location, is to go out to lounge or, like, a little club area, and you'd be like, yo, it's kind of dead in here. Like, no one's doing anything. But then you look at the stories of the people around you, and you would swear this is the best shit ever. Like, you would swear that, like, they're having a blast. It's so fun. They're drunk. The music is going. They can't. Oh, my God. It's a movie. You're like, it's lit. Like, whatever. Like, people are just having a blast. And you look in real life, you'd be like, yo, ain't shit going on. It's incredible. That's the best thing to do. People, you can create a complete cyber life, even in reality. And that's where people are right now. Talk about, like, you had touched on before we went off on a tangent, you had touched on Biggie and kind of like that era and everything. The Biggie documentary just dropped on Netflix. There's a million of them in the world. But this new one had, like, some exclusive footage by his boy who followed them around. Cool. It was dope. New York during that era, we talked about the DJs, but that was probably the zenith. That was the top. That was a mountaintop for New York rap. If it was built on the backs of everyone else, that's when it hit the mountaintop. 97 on, it started on the decline. It wasn't a rapid decline. I'd say like 2005, it hit a steep decline.
Nah, it hit a steep decline prior to that. Ooh. I wouldn't say 50.
Nah,
50 was the last.
50,
that was it. Yeah.
That was 2003, 2004.
Exactly.
Dipset 2003, 2004.
Yeah.
And
they,
then
exactly.
You fell off a cliff. So that was the end of that era. But the Biggie era, and just those, what's crazy is such a small window. So what, 90, I'll extend it.
I mean,
92, 91?
That it was the zenith?
No, through like the Biggie era itself, like outside of like the Bad Boy era. That this focused on, because I talked about
Bad Boy era was 94 to about 2000. Because remember, Flavor in Your Ear came out in 94, and that was their first hit record.
Yeah, but Biggie had a joint on Uptown before.
Yeah, but it Biggie still was not a household name. He was still being promoted.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
I'd say from before he was a household name, when it started, like the start of Biggie.
Okay.
Tail end of Nas, you had Wu, but it was still West Coast heavy. So what, 93, I'll go 93 through, let's say 98, 99 with Maze. That era, I talk about it a lot because I was closer than most, you were closer than damn near all to the era and what that was like in hip hop. So I talk about it like my Uncle Chuck was at Uptown for a while. Where'd he go after Uptown? Arista?
No, he went to Motown.
Motown offices after Uptown. So Uncle Mario was that Bad Boy at the time. You dropped your Sour Face Cloud, which is dope. Like, yo, I YouTubed it the other day. The music holds up. But, like, everybody was in the scene. Everyone was making moves at that same time. Like, that's something you can't get off of a documentary, necessarily.
Yeah, but I think, when do you think it started to the climb to that level?
98 was the, I'd said 97. 97 was probably that was the mountaintop. 98, everything else was. And I love Jay. But Jay can't be the only one.
From it just everything, it appears to be like that because okay, I can't argue that. Only because there was a lot of controversy. You had the Pac, the Biggie, the East Coast, the West Coast. You had young executives, you know what I'm saying, that was in the front of it. You know, obviously, you know, Puff and what's the name? Death Row, right?
Yeah. Then you had Dame, Irv.
You had Jermaine Dupri. You know what I'm saying? It was the young black executive that was in the forefront. But from a rhyming perspective, from a hip hop perspective, it was better to me, honestly, where it was just tons of artists, East Coast, West Coast. I think 93 was the top. 93 was the top, and then it was a slow decline, but as far as the art itself, you understand what I'm saying? Because before that, you figure it started going up in like 86, 85, 86 with Slick Rick. You went Big Daddy Kane, you went Biz, you went Rakim, all different styles, yeah. But they took it to another level where it was just like, because prior to Slick Rick and all of them, you still kind of had, Run DMC. And Run DMC was better than Cold Crush and all of them, and then you had, but the best hip-hop, when, and again, to go back to say how I can come up with that opinion, is because we had those two radio stations, and then you had the underground station. So what we would do on Friday night was we had the double box cassette, and we would record the radio station, and you would play all the new songs during the week. And each weekend, you could record the radio show and get new music. So that's a lot of music. So to me personally, from 86 to 93 was when it was just out of control. You had so many different topics. You had Flavor Flav and Chuck
Public
D.
Enemy, yeah.
Public Enemy, like they was talking about something else, and Chuck could rhyme. It wasn't like he just was political; like he could rhyme. Then you had your battle rappers, the EPMDs of the world, and then they brought in Redman, and then you had Tribe and Jungle Brothers. I was listening to Jungle Brothers album, and I was just listening to that today. Like the Jungle Brothers, they was a one hit wonder, a one album wonder. But you had Jungle Brothers, and that dropped in 88 when you was born. You know what I'm saying? And that was just, to me, better music than the Biggie Run. The Biggie Run was more, everything changed to, yo, we getting money rapping, we got money. And
or drug rapping.
Or they rode the wave off of Nas's picture of drug rap. So, yep. You know, and that was it.
All right, so if 92, 93 is the zenith, right? So you had Down South, you had Outkast, you had Dungeon Goody Mob, the whole Dungeon Family, all that. You start getting the Texas vibes, Scarface coming out, West Coast is popping. You've been had Ice-T, Cube is starting to make his solo run. You get Death Row. Yeah, that's probably the zenith, right? So, okay, then I guess Bling Jiggy Rap is where it starts going downhill. Biggie still is like on a mountaintop, but it hasn't fallen yet. So if 93 is the top of the mountain, they kept it afloat for like 3-4 years.
Oh yeah, they did.
Yeah,
they
so did. It's like it had like a little flat plateau,
yes.
And then it fell off the cliff.
Yes.
So all of this is to say that the documentary, what it reminded me of, is Biggie only had 2 albums. He was so young. Pac had 1 million albums, but he was still super young. When you look at the people like held at that regard that early, when Nas was 19 when he made Illmatic, hip-hop has always kind of been a young man's game. The quality when people were young was so high. I feel like now the quality is with the same older rappers. Like, I'm listening to Royce's album. Royce is 40. Jay-Z just had a song with Nipsey and might have the verse of the year so far. Jay is 51. Like, the young guys, I don't know, maybe I'm just not young. When all this was happening, because I know you like Nas, but they were all your age. What were people 10 years older than you saying? Like, did they like the Nas, the Biggie when they hit all this? Or are they like, nah, like, were they still clutching on to like, yo, I want to listen to MC Shan? Like, or were they?
No, actually, no, not at all. They was like, these young dudes is killing it. Because there was no denying it, because it was the same artistry taken to another level. But you have to remember, and to answer your question, why it's a young man's game, the original forefathers, they was 19, 20, 21 at that time. Flash and they was 19. That's why the get Down is such a great show, because they was high school, early college ages and stuff like that. So it was from the birth, it was a young man's game. So now you young, and then now I'm influenced by you. I'm in the fourth, fifth grade. I can't wait to get my time. That's why it's coming. Nas said, you know, when I was young at this, I used to do my thing hard. Or when he was like, I was too scared to grab the mics in the parks, and because we was influenced by that. And it was just, when can we get our time? And then once we hit 18, 19, 20, then it was our time. And then the older dudes just kind of just fell to the backside, because in music, period, everybody wants to know the next hot person. And then that next hot person was coming up with something banging. So you couldn't have a hit record and it not be hot. You know what I'm saying? So, and again, now it's our time. Now we're 16, 17. We had it all the way until we was, again, now we young executives. So when I say we, I mean my generation, who was born in it, right? So now I'm third, fourth grade, flashing them is coming out. And then now it's my turn to rhyme, and I'm in high school into college, and now I'm a young man getting money, and now we are the Puff Daddies in the world. I think about it. Puff is 50, 51.
Yeah,
and he's been executive 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's been 20 years since he had a hit record, damn near, if you want to really like that he produced. Yeah. You know, I'm not talking about getting on the French Montana bandwagon. I'm saying that he produced. It's been 20 years, so he was 30 and washed. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you want to, it was a young man's game. And then when it stopped being a East Coast, West Coast traditional rapper game, 50 was young at the time. So now it's just the young generation's time. So it really didn't change. It's the young dudes, they not carrying it. They're not doing nothing innovative. They're not, they don't rap. They don't rhyme. They don't. It's kind of like the DJ. They don't have to mix. They could press a button and play a record. It's very microwavable, very lazy. You know what
I'm saying? Auto-tune fixes everything you need, too.
And then auto-tune ain't really that good. But if you do auto-tune, and it was funny when Jay-Z did the death of auto-tune, so it must be like Dracula, because it made its way back. It went to Melodyne for a hot second, because nobody wanted to get on the auto tune, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it just came back. But I want to say this generation just really feels like, if Kel is doing something and it's hot, I have to do the same exact thing. I can't do something different than Kel and still be myself. So the copycat, what they're doing, is very lazy. So now for you to get the fix you need out of it, the innovative stuff, the only people who can continue to do that was the people who was unique from day one.
From jump,
which is us. So, you're going to get it. And, like, when you can't do something, it's two things you could do. You could be a hater. Oh, it's not good. It's not good. That's whack. Or you could be, yo, not as dope. You know, I wish I could do it. I can't do it. Or you could be like, these kids be like, oh, we don't do that. You know what I'm saying? We're rock stars. We're not MCs. We're not rappers. That's not what we do. So you can't call it that. So, but yet they want to say it's still a rap genre. Nah, they're not rappers. They're not MCs. Like, they doing something else. Give it its own name, and we won't hate on it. Yeah. If you don't call it rap, you don't say you can't, you know what I'm saying? You can't say we playing football and you doing rugby. Dogs, that's rugby. That's not football. So that's what it is. So it's still a young man's game because it always will be. But they're just not doing nothing to get you excited.
Yeah, nothing at all. Nothing like back then. Like, nothing 21-year-old Biggie dropping Ready to Die. 20-year-old Nas dropping Illmatic. Like, it's not even the same. And that leads me to our last topic, Pops. And that's something I saw on Twitter. Someone else watched this Biggie documentary. Shout out to my dude Spence, Views from the 7. You can check them out. They're wild dudes over there. But Spence's tweets are always off-the-wall bonkers. But it gives me good ammo for the show. He said, which is completely false, and I let him know this off-rip, that Eminem has the best 1-2 punch in hip-hop history in terms of albums. And I love M, like, in my heart of hearts, especially early M. But it's false. He chose Marshall Mathers LP and Eminem Show as the best 1-2 punch in hip-hop history. The Eminem Show, Marshall Mathers LP is incredible. The Eminem Show is not that on the second album. It is not. But it made me think, what are the best 1-2 punches in hip-hop history? It doesn't have to be first and second album. Just what's the best bong, bong, 1-2, back-to-back punch albums in hip-hop history? He mentioned DMX. That's tough because it's hard for me to narrow down two DMXs to go back-to-back. I'm not sure if X has one classic album. Maybe one? The Hell Is Hot or whatever. Like, maybe that one? I'll give him as a classic album. Maybe. Like, so Jay doesn't got the back-to-back, boom, boom, just knock it out of the park.
Let's think about it, though, because prior to Jay, you was only getting an album every year and a half.
Which is still good. Like, but still people would like, put like, out back-to-back.
No, because that time in between the year and a half and when they came out with their second album, somebody else jumped in and was hot, and people just really wasn't trying to check for them. Like, it was weird. Like EPMD, for example, they didn't have a bad album until, matter of fact, Mobb Deep might be back-to-back banging albums because their second album, when they had the sample they used from Scarface, boom, boom, boom. That I can't remember the name of the record, but their second album, Hell on Earth, was as good as their first one. Ooh. And their first one was classic.
No, so first you could one go back classic. To
back. Yeah, but see, but the second one, they still was.
Yeah, the Infamous was better. Yeah, yeah.
The Infamous, if you, the Infamous
better than Hell on Earth.
But didn't mean it doesn't fit your criteria as back-to-back banging albums. You didn't say the first one had to be better than the second one by the first one.
But yeah, but that had Shook two banging albums. Yeah. Survival of the Fittest.
Survival of the Fittest, on that. Yeah.
Cradle to the Grave was on that. Mm-hmm. It's good. I mean, I'd probably put, if I had to say, like, the best 1-2 punch in hip-hop history is Tribe. I mean, they only had a 1-2 punch. Like, that's all they gave you.
And the reason why I say that is because the second album had more Fife on it. So that's when Fife came off. That's what made it hot. Because
Low End Theory. I like Low End Theory more than Midnight Marauders, maybe.
Oh, me too. Me too. Yeah, me too. But they spoon-fed you Fife to where you wanted to hear more Fife, and then when they came out with the second one, it was like Fife was damn near on every record, so it was like, okay, you got a lot of Fife.
Yeah.
And Fife was the original mad rapper. He was just angry.
Outkast. It's tough because my two favorite Outkast albums are split by ATLiens, which I know people love ATLiens. It's a great album. But if it went, you know, Southern Playalistic followed by Aquemini, I think Outkast would have it for me. But even then, Aquemini and Stankonia back-to-back is pretty damn good. Stankonia had the hits. Aquemini was just lyrically incredible back-to-back. I'm taking Nas out of this.
Nas didn't have two good albums.
We've talked about it on this show, Pops. people believe, this is a whole different Twitter topic, that It Was Written is better than Illmatic. Like, there's a wave of people. Wait, like, tidal wave of people who believe this. So, no, but It Was Written was okay. Like, it was cool. But I can't even think, like, before then, LL's two albums back to back. And see, I try to go back and figure out, like, yo, who really had that two album run? And I don't know, man. Tribe was so classic. EPMD might be close. Tribe's two albums or EPMD, Strictly Business and Unfinished Business. Because that's another one that automatically hit me.
Incredible. Because they brought out Redman on that one.
Like Unfinished Business and Strictly Business back to back is tough. It is tough. Like, people sleep on EPMD on that run.
See, the thing was that Redman was so good. When he came out, it kind of like was like, okay, EPMD is not as good as we thought they was. Because Redman is on another level. And I'm an EPMD fanatic. Like, that was my crew. But when Red came, it was like, ooh, okay. Nah, you're not on that level at all. But, no, I still think, like, if you want to say that, because...
Or does Biggie take it?
Jay-Z just kept putting album, and he just, his momentum, his snowball, he just was incredible. But I thought, I mean, Biggie's second album, just between everything that Biggie went through, and then he had the, technically that was his album with his crew.
Yeah, the Junior Mafia album.
Yeah, that was his album. It wasn't his album, but it was his album. It kept him afloat. But I thought, I mean, Biggie's two albums is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, Life After Death. People criticize the second disc, and I just don't know how. Like, it's wild to me. Like, once you go, listen, the first disc, if the first disc stood alone, it'd be a classic in its own. Right? Like, Somebody's Gotta Die, Hypnotized, Kicking the Door. Last Day was my joint. I Love the Dough with Jay. My Money, More Problems, What's Beef? I Got a Story to Tell as an outro is crazy.
That album made him the greatest rapper of all time, because his first album didn't have him as the greatest rapper of all time.
No.
He was really good, but that second album was, you know, Tom Brady-esque. Like,
That was it. Like,
if you're the greatest rapper ever and you only did two albums, you got to have the back-to-back two greatest albums ever. One album might carry the other one, you know what I'm saying? Because the party, it was fun, it was cool, but, you know, it was good. It wasn't classic, but the second one was ridiculous.
Nah, yeah, you're completely right, Pops. Like, that Biggie album is just bananas. So going back-to-back... If Biggie's the best ever, then Biggie's the best ever. He has the best 1-2 punch in hip-hop history. So, man, it's been a ball. I loved it. Pops, thank you. None but the best. We're headed to break, everyone. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this conversation between me and my Pops. That is my guy. You guys stick around, though. Plenty of pro wrestling still to come in the next two segments. Going to be a blast. Shout out to the old man, Andreas. He'll be back next episode. You guys don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Back.
Hey everyone, it's Lindsay Rhodes and I've got a new podcast, The NFL Road Show. Fun and kind of nerdy conversation about the NFL every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I've got some amazing guests that are joining me. I'll be breaking the huddle with the top stories, previewing games. We'll get you set for the weekend fantasy with our Fantasy Friday episodes, and we'll answer some of your questions as well. So subscribe to the NFL Roadshow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody, just that quick, we are back. Shout out to my pops for joining us. That's always a fun segment. It's been a couple years since I've had pops on the show, so that I'm flying solo today. It was dope to bring him in, chop it up, talk hip-hop. He's a wild dude, so it's always nice to hear him. You know, that's my heart. My pops is like, he looks younger than me. So we go out and people are like, yo, that's your brother. Like, it's crazy. He's still young enough to get that bounce, give those vibes. So him coming on the show, it just fuels me to have fun and to be better. And it's always good to share time, you know, with your parents and allow them to enjoy something that is special to you. So Pops enjoys the podcast with me. So it was dope to have him on. But now it's time to talk pro wrestling. I'm not going to get into the nitty gritty, the super detailed, all of that of this show because the old man's not here today. So what I'm going to do is talk more, just get us through the week that was, talk more of the generals topics of the week, and then of course I'll preview AEW Revolution, in which me and the old man on Sunday will recap it and get you into a week of pro wrestling after that. So now that I'm here alone, where do I start? I think I am going to talk about NXT first, because there's not a ton to talk about in NXT. We've covered a lot of the recent storylines, but the Twitterverse has been speaking, and there are a couple rumors out there. The first being the NXT TakeOver Mania, I guess this would be NXT TakeOver Tampa, is going to be on a Thursday before Mania. I believe it's April 8th. Giving WrestleMania 2 days, Saturday and Sunday, the 10th and 11th, to happen. And then Friday, of course, is the SmackDown before Mania. So that is 4 straight days of pro wrestling. And that's not even counting the normal NXT show that usually happens on Wednesdays. I don't know how you roll a go-home show straight into your pay-per-view the next day, but maybe that's just a recap show. We've seen them do those before, where they kind of just run all the highlight packages, explaining all the feuds, giving you background, and maybe having the participants face off heading into the next night's events. So that would be really smart. Maybe throw a match on there, like we just saw Karrion Kross versus Escobar. That wasn't on the last TakeOver, so they did it the following week. Maybe you have one of those feuds blow off the week prior. The women's division is deep. You could throw the women on there for a great women's match. It really makes for an interesting show that Wednesday, leading into a TakeOver the following Thursday. But crazy amounts of pro wrestling, not including AEW has a show Wednesday as normal beforehand, and they also have a special following WrestleMania on that following Monday. So AEW has a Monday special, AEW Dark on Tuesday following Mania, and the normal AEW Dynamite. Then we have, it might be the premiere, the new AEW show with the Big Show on commentary, or Paul White as he's now called. So on commentary, but they roll that out right after Mania, so that'll be a huge buzz around that. Of course, the Raw after Mania is always huge. And then that brings us to the second rumor, is that NXT is moving to Tuesdays. Nothing confirmed yet, but the USA Network did just acquire the rights to the National Hockey League. Hockey generally runs on Wednesdays. It's big hockey night. So to not disrupt that, hockey probably takes precedent over NXT. But we've been clamoring on this show, people online. I know Andreas has been saying this forever. It should be split anyway. This just makes a lot more sense. AEW, see a little spike, right? Cool. They'll probably go up maybe 50,000, 75,000 viewers for Wednesday, but it'll get them closer eventually to the 1 million mark. It's not like SmackDown Raw is that much higher anymore, right? Raw is dropping to new lows every day, and that's mostly because there's a lot of WWE programming on over-the-top platforms, right? So you get it on the apps, you get it through your phone. There's plenty of different ways to watch. You could wait and watch on Hulu. All of that is little money that the WWE will get anyway, so they're not stressing the declining ratings. Vince McMahon just got a $1 billion check from Peacock. So there's all these background things that go into it. But with AEW, those ratings as a new show trying to bring in new sponsors are kind of key. So get them closer to a million. Get them closer to where they can say, yo, look, we're competing with Raw and not NXT anymore. And then NXT, they shouldn't be competing with them anyway. Do your thing. Run your own race. Be on Tuesdays. Make it unique. Don't worry about ratings. And your ratings will organically go up. They'll go up to the high end, 800,000 a show, 840. Still probably 200,000 less than AEW, but it'll be way more eyes than what you're getting right now because fans of both products no longer have to choose. So I like that move if it is true. I mean, there's several reports out there. It'd be a dumb report to lie about. So if it does come to fruition, smart move by everyone at WWE. Hockey might have saved them and saved the NXT product, at least on television, because increased ratings means more money to spend. You can pay all these new recruits coming into the building. You're not wasting talent. You can launch a show like Evolve, which they're bringing back for Peacock exclusively, and afford to pay these people. And I'm sure Vince will use a lot of the money to overpay talent to not go to AEW and back to the indies. And then he'll also use it to bring in people like Bill Goldberg or Brock Lesnar, whoever he can talk into coming out of retirement or pseudo-retirement to wrestle for a crazy lump sum of money. So the wheel keeps turning. That's what it is. Moving on to WWE main roster. Listen, there's only one thing to talk about, people. It's not rocket science, baby. Business is booming for not only the Hurt Business, but Bobby Lashley. Lashley. Oh, man, I missed that. By the way, wouldn't Leo Rush be an incredible member of the Hurt Business? What? Oh, man, this, like, faction would be great for him as a wrestler. I digress. But the Hurt Business now is draped in gold. Tag team championships, those might be silver now. Regardless, they're draped in belts. Booked well. MVP is the mouthpiece. Shelton's still showing that he has a character, a voice, a gimmick outside of that. It's amazing. Lashley had the United States Championship, but a week after losing that, didn't get pinned in the match. It was the triple threat. Easy money. Belts off of him. It's to Matt Riddle, who's also been kind of funny. Listen, I'm giving Riddle a chance. And then you're like, yo, what does this mean for Lashley? Is he going to go after Riddle again, try to get it back? We see immediately at the end of the last pay-per-view, cool, Miz kind of pays him to do his dirty work. Miz is the champion. People thought Miz was going to go into Mania as the champion. Not so fast. Because he had to pay what he owed. And Bobby Lashley came through. End of Raw. Last 6 minutes. Raw teased this every single hour. Thought it was going to kick it off. Nope. Miz ran away. Second time. Miz stomach hurt back in the back. Third time he came out to the ring. He physically ran away from Bobby Lashley, came back out last segment, 6 minutes left. You're like, yo, what is going on? They made an impromptu Iron Man match to have people around the ring to make sure The Miz wouldn't get away. And Bobby Lashley made quick work of The Miz, captured the title, stood there, did the signature point to the WrestleMania sign. We don't even know who he's pointing to. He just knows he's the champ, and his ass is going to WrestleMania. I don't even know if we've seen the champ point before, but regardless, he points at the sign himself like, yo, I'm going to be there. Who wants the smoke? He breaks down a little emotional, a little bit, catches himself, and him and MVP have the smirk in the back. There's the pictures of the Hurt Business all holding their titles, MVP in the suit, Bleacher Report putting out posts, Black Excellence. This, and it, best part, didn't happen in February. WWE is great for doing that, only for Black History Month. Happened on March 1st, baby. It shows that we can get a black champion anytime now. And that's my favorite part about this. Not just black, but all minorities, just something different. Shout out to everyone in group chat. We had a convo about this, and it's funny, like at one point it was like, so is it bad to have white champions now? Like, no, white champions are fine. My goat of all time is white. Like, it's cool. He had a mullet. So that's fine. We just need to make it normal to have anyone as the champion, which is the only reason why it's so important. And you have to force the issue of having black champions, because that's not seen as normal. You can have Mexican champions. They've been there. Still not enough. Spanish champions by any means. But a lot of those guys had to wear masks, or Eddie Guerrero had the lie, cheat, and steal gimmick with a low ride. Like, there were still some stereotypical aspects. There wasn't any of that with Kofi Kingston. It's a feel-good story, black guy, faction, paid his dues for all these years. That's what touched people's soul. Kofi Kingston touched people's souls. Same thing, even though he's a heel, with Bobby Lashley, is that the Hurt Business is a faction that could be white, it could be black, it could be Mexican, it could be Asian. Like, this could be Los Ignorables. This could be, LIJ. This could be Suzuki Goon. Like, all those are just like Hurt Business. But we haven't seen that really succeed in the WWE. Not to the level where you put your top guy in the company, put the belt on him in a faction like that. Not an all-minority faction. Not a badass faction led by someone who wasn't white. So, to see this, it's like, okay, we're normalizing it. And that's what made it so important. That's what made it so dope. That's why I'm here chanting, Lashley, Lashley, Lashley. It's because we're normalizing having a black champ. Only the third WWE champion that has been black. Yes, some have held a big gold, Booker, Mark Henry, shout out to them, but it wasn't the WWE Championship. And we had to establish that and make that normal. So not making it a WrestleMania moment, we loved Kofi Mania. Me and Dre were there, we were ringside. We had our seats, we were in the videos, we're losing our minds. We loved Kofi Mania. But that was a WrestleMania moment. You had to do so much. You had to make it feel so big just for a black man to win the championship. This was a black man in a normal-ass crew, heel, winning the championship on a normal-ass Monday Night Raw. It could have been anyone. And that's where we have to get to. That's why it is so special. Because now, black people can win championships whenever. Shout out to the black women holding it down. Throughout wrestling, we're going to get an all-black woman SmackDown Women's Championship match. Bianca and Sasha the Boss. So that it's great seeing diversity everywhere. Asuka is champion, even though they're doing her a little wrong. And, her run hasn't been great. But Spanish women, everything. I love it. I just love to see the diversity. We need the same. We need another dope Spanish champion. Andrade Cien Almas is a guy you can push. You can make that shit happen. He's a guy that you're so close and they fell out of favor with him. Give him another run. That's a guy who can do it. Plenty of guys can do it. Shout out to the Samoan Dynasty as a family. They're pushing it. They're doing their thing. Roman Reigns, top of the game. So I love the diversity. We have to keep pushing it. Other companies are doing it. Impact does it very well. ROH doing it very well. AEW, a lot of people are critical. But you know what? Shout out to Dre. He talked to me about this too. After I wasn't overly critical, but I wasn't defending them necessarily. But he made it clear, like, yo, listen, no one there is in position to be champion yet. All of their minority talent is so green. Let them build. But they have pieces there that could build. The Jade chick who I just saw team with Cody was amazing. Yeah, they can build her. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to give them time. So that's cool. I liked how that built. But Black Man is champ. Damn, it feels good. And I want everything to be champ. I want an openly LGBTQ person to be champ. A gay man is champ. It's dope just being themselves, be you. And that's okay to win a championship at WrestleMania, at a pay-per-view, at a Monday Night Raw, at a house show. Just be you. And I think that's what this Bobby Lashley thing showed us more than anything. So want to touch on that. I'll get into more of that, obviously, when Andres is here and pick his brain. We're going to hit our last break right now. When I come back, I'm going to break down and preview AEW's upcoming pay-per-view. So you guys don't go anywhere. More show to go. Be right back. We'll get right back to the show in a second, but first, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be able to be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads to totals to teams, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day.
Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, we are back for the home stretch, and we are talking AEW Revolution. Before we get into the pay-per-view and I give you my predictions for that, I have to talk about AEW Dynamite, the go-home show. And that's exactly how it started off. It was Dynamite to start. I was worried about the Shaq, the whole, you know, Shaq guest appearance, what he was going to do. It was him and Red Velvet versus Cody and Jade Cargo, I believe. I probably butchered her name. And she looked amazing, too. I feel so bad for doing that. So it was him and Cody and Jade. And when the match kicked off, really, it was super smart because they had the women carry the beginning of the match. So Cody and Shaq had a couple spots. Shaq did a spot on the outside of the ring where he beat up the Nightmare Collective. Why is this still a thing? And growing. It's odd. But Shaq looked really good there. But the women really dominated the action in the ring. And they were really, really good. And I was correct. Jade Cargo. So Jade looked amazing. Shout out to Justin Ivey, Reverse Riot Pack group chat, who was like, yo, she's going to be there, Charlotte. Like, she looked that good in the ring. Her presence is great. She just looks like a superstar. She's super green. Not trying to rush her. But when we talk about the women's division needing star power, needing to add some people, I think she's a great addition. She just looks like a million bucks in and out of the ring. So her and Red Velvet carried the action. They brought out tables. They had psychology in the ring. I could have just watched those two go at it. But of course, Shaq and Cody get their little spots in. And then it ramps up towards the end where Shaq gets in. He does a power bomb to Cody before he gives the Brody Lee tribute with the kissing the fingers. Amazing way to, you know, just endear himself even more, like Shaq needs it, to the AEW crowd. Like, once you do that, you're golden. So smart move by Shaq and the people who put the match together. Then Cody takes the power bomb. Great looking power bomb. I've seen real pro wrestlers that can't do a power bomb like that. So Cody takes that. Great bump. You fast forward like 30 seconds to a minute. Shaq is back on the apron. Cody does a dive over the ropes onto Shaq through two tables. And I lost my shit. I marked out. Great bump by Shaq. They took him to the back afterwards. He sold. They put him in an ambulance. Somehow he disappeared. That's where it got weird. But the match itself, the selling, everything, Shaq did his thing. He wasn't just out there to kind of do what he did in the Royal Rumble, right? Like him just there, Big Show, look clunky, go over the top. He took real bumps. It looked fun. Such a fun match. Way more fun than I thought it would be. And they crushed it. Knocked it out of the ballpark. It couldn't have been better. And then going along in Dynamite, they continued to set up other feuds. There was the press conference with Jericho and MJF, which was pretty cool, outside of like the Barstool Sparks stuff. And I did mark out when Eric Bischoff came. Who knew a babyface Eric Bischoff would work in 2021? But when he said that he was there on behalf of his 83 Weeks podcast, that shit was funny. So I think that was really cool. A lot of people share our same networks. If you guys don't know, Wrestling with Stereotypes shares a network. Shout out to Conrad, who was also there. So that was funny. That was well done. Jurassic Express was in a match with FTR and Tully, which, you know, it saw the return of Ty Dillinger. Yes, I know his name is Sean Spears. I don't care. His mama named him Ty Dillinger. I'm going to call him Ty Dillinger. So no more 10 count, even though he's blonde. Kind of came back with the Cody blonde. But joined them, helped them win the match. There was moments in there where Tully looked great. The match to me wasn't as fun as the first one, but I could see people really enjoying it. They had a lot of callbacks, a lot of nostalgia. Arn came out afterwards, threw up the four. It was fun. Tully had a great like suplex spot. It was really cool to watch. Well done again. So it was a fun episode to start. There was stuff mixed in that was okay, but it all made sense. It was a fun go-home show. Too often in WWE, we've just, as fans, gotten used to just boring, nonsensical go-home shows. Go-home shows that really just ended, no finishes all night, and kind of preview the same matches you're going to get at the pay-per-view that Sunday. They'll just run them with like a stupid stipulation and not have a finish. AEW didn't do that. It made sense. They had fun. They built feuds and promos. And then everyone else who wasn't, you know, immediately in a feud or going to wrestle, they had matches. So it made a lot of sense. It was a fun go-home show. But now, time to get predictions for the pay-per-view itself. I'm going to go straight down the line here. We have, I'm not doing the pre-show, even though Rio and Thunder Rosa versus Britt Baker and Rebel might be fun. I mean, Thunder Rosa is great anytime she's in the ring. Britt Baker has really grown in her role. So I can't really pass that up. That's going to be fun. And then we have the Dark Order in a casino tag team royale match to see who gets a future shot at the tag team champions. So Bear Country, I don't even know who Bear Country is. I should probably watch AEW Dark. Then the Dark Order has two teams, Alex Reynolds and John Silver, and then Evil Uno and Stu Grayson. It'll be funny to see how they play in there. We have Santana and Ortiz, Free LAX is the hashtag forever. They took the bumps to build up the tag team feud. Man, just let them go. Let them go and do their own thing. So, I mean, there's some fun tag teams in there. I can keep going down the list, but there's so many to name. I mean, we have SCU, Kazarian and Daniels representing them, the Natural Nightmares, which whatever, Varsity Blondes, Death Triangle, so many good teams in their private party, of course. But I really want to see Dark Order number one team in there win, Alex Reynolds, John Silver, just because John Silver is hilarious, make for a good tag team down the road. The smart move would be for Santana and Ortiz to win. LAX, take this. And then now they're going to the back like, yo, Jericho, MJF, we have a tag team title shot in the future. Like, if you guys win, That's dope. We get to have a title shot, and it creates like that dysfunction kind of to get them the hell out of there, even though you'll hear my pick for that tag match. But it's just really cool to see, like, okay, you have a storyline where you've had the Bucks kind of put them through tables at the go-home show, all this stuff. Make sure they win. Carry on that storyline. Build more into that going forward. Next match, Miro versus Kip Sabian. Miro and Kip Sabian with Penelope Ford versus the best friends, Orange Cassidy and Chuck Taylor in this match. Yeah, just get Miro far away from him, man. I'm done with the wedding. I'm done with the best man stuff. I'm good. Orange Cassidy is going to be great. The entrance is always dope. But Miro needs to win this, look super strong, and then start his singles run, because that's really all that matters for him now. Right now, it's all about the singles run. Next match up, we're going with the Young Bucks tag team titles match versus the Inner Circle. Chris Jericho, MJF, with Wardlow in the corner. It should be a good match. It's the Young Bucks. Do they have bad matches? MJF should be cool. Chris Jericho can do what Chris Jericho can do at this age. I don't expect Jericho and MJF to win. This should be the final straw. This should be the, you keep costing me, or Jericho mistakenly nails MJF at the end. Some shenanigans to create their dissension. Completely break the Inner Circle. Get rid of the faction. Everyone starts breaking up. We've already seen Sammy Guevara bounce. And we really start seeing the full split of the Inner Circle after this. And you got to do it for Papa Buck, which that promo was not my favorite. But you know what? That's what they're rolling with. Do it for Papa Buck. Next up, we have Team Taz, Brian Cage and Ricky Starks versus Darby Allin and Sting. There's a ton of tag matches on this card. Street fight. Sting's not losing, right? So Sting's going to hit somebody with a bat. Ricky Starks is cool, charismatic, and he's in a position where he can take the pin. That's just what it is, right? Like, it's not going to hurt him. Brian Cage is still huge. He's a monster. Darby Allin is going to do something there. You're like, yo, did Darby kill himself? No, but it's going to be super dope. Give me Sting, Darby Allin to win the street fight. A street fight stipulation really hides Sting at this point too, which is great. He doesn't have to do a ton of wrestling moves. Hit a stinger splash, hit people with the bat. Get some rest time on the outside. Cool beans. Put somebody through a table or something. Scorpion Deathlock to win it. Pretty simple. Hide him. He's an attraction at this point. That's what he should be. So next up, we have Shida versus Ryu. Women's World Championship match. I just hope that is good. Shida as a character is just like whatever at this point. I think they need to find a way maybe to work Britt Baker back into the picture, because she just has the most camera-ready character right now. She's that chicken shit asshole heel. It just works. Let her roll with it. See what she got. Because she is good in the ring, but she doesn't add anything to the division. Right now, she's not capturing eyes. It's a boring program. So Britt Baker at least carry the belt on TV every week. She'll be fun. She'll be funny. That's just the little kickstart that the division needs. And then we can dive back into some of these, you know, wrestle technicians or build people to have both. Right now, like I've been telling people openly, AEW isn't necessarily building characters and gimmicks. Dark Order is the only thing they've built. Unfortunately, due to the passing of Brody, we didn't see what that could really be when it came to fruition. It seemed like they were gaining traction as a babyface group. Rest in peace, Brody. So we don't know what they can do in terms of building characters. They put a couple factions together. A lot of them are just random guys thrown together, including Taz's faction. It's just Team Taz. Everything else they've inherited. Jungle Express inherited. A Private Party inherited. You have the Elite inherited. The Nightmare Collective kind of just thrown together, but that's still just Cody and Fam inherited. They haven't built anyone up. Miro would be one of their first projects where you got to build him from scratch, because his old character was Rusev. So you got to give him a character people care about. You got to let him roll with that. You got to actually take something in a gimmick and make it connect. Even though, like, you know, Rusev Day is super over and people are going to want him to succeed, that fan base is going to let him fail. But you still got to build a character people care about. Everyone else, they were who they were when they got there. So in this case, I think you got to do that with the women's division. Build a character. And Britt Baker, you know, she had that gimmick and she's just ready. I think they have to work her back into the title picture. This match should be good, though. Next up, Adam Page versus Matt Hardy. I really don't care about this match. Big money match. Winner receives the losers, earnings, whatever. It'll be a match. Maybe we see Matt Hardy start going through gimmicks again, broken type shit. I don't even know. Adam Page wins. Big money Matt loses all his money and has to go back to being broken. It does nothing for me. And I like Adam Page still. And drunk Adam Page was cool. Halfway babyface, Dark Order, Adam Page just doesn't fit for me. I don't think the Dark Order and him really mesh well. I don't get it. It's like putting apples, not even next to oranges. It's like putting apples next to peanuts. Like it just doesn't make sense. Like they don't go together. They're cool on their own. They don't go together. So it is what it is. Adam Page wins that match. And then we have the Face of the Revolution ladder match. All ladder matches are fun. I'm always here for the flippy shit. I'm always here for the big spot. So count me in, even though people on this podcast know how I feel about Cody Rhodes and his in-ring work. But he's a crazy man. So he might just do some wild shit off a ladder and make this super entertaining. So we have Cody Rhodes, Scorpio Sky, Pentagon, Lance Archer, and Max Caster. All right, I don't know why the hell Max Caster's in this. I don't watch Dark, so maybe that's why he's built up the resume. Cody Rhodes should retain. It'd be dope to see Penta get it, but that's whatever at this point. After everything that everyone's been saying and like the diversity and Black Champ and blah, blah, yes, you shouldn't rush people in roles. You shouldn't put people, a Black person there just because, right? We're asking for everyone to have equal footing and just have the opportunity to earn titles, not to be gifted titles. But with this TNT title, it's a way to keep Cody strong, someone to randomly win. And due to the climate and just seeing how other companies are operating, it could be a spot where Scorpio Sky can just randomly go up there and win. Why not? Cody can do whatever he wants. Like, Cody doesn't need a belt. Why not just shock people and put Scorpio Sky in that situation? See what he has. If not, you have a guy like Miro, who I mentioned earlier, who could be a heel. Just make him a monster. Or you can unleash a Brian Cage or someone, and they can have a legit feud for the TNT Championship. Or excuse me, after this, I think Darby remains champion. But Cody doesn't have to win, right? Like, you don't need a heel to win. Someone can take that belt off of Darby in a feud. Like I mentioned, the guys who I just mentioned, the Miro, the Brian Cage, anyone of those guys become a heel champ and then have the winner of this, a la Scorpio Sky, win it. And then you put him in position and you see what he has. You put him in position. It's like Money in the Bank. We're going to put you in position. We can pull this shit on the trigger on you next week. We can pull it on you 6 months from now. But you know you're going to get your shot. So build yourself towards it and make it work. So I think Scorpio Sky is probably the guy that should get it. Maybe Penta gets it. Cody doesn't need it at all. Maybe Shaq enters it too. You get like Shaq. Who knows? But I don't think Cody needs to win that. And then main event, Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley, exploding barbed wire death match. I can't even believe I'm saying that shit. It's crazy. It's Raw. It's Moxley. It's why he left the WWE. He has always been this guy. He did well in the other mold. Don't get me wrong. But it wasn't him. He was so good enough that he could succeed in the PG WWE realm. But this is who he was from the get-go. This is who he wanted to be. He had the money. He had everything else. He wanted to do this at a big stage. He didn't want to compromise. He wanted his cake and to eat it too. He wanted his title and a death match. So this is what he gets. It's going to be amazing. He retained his title against Kenta in Japan, which is odd because both me and Dre thought he'd lose it, kind of go on hiatus. The baby shouldn't be too far off. Paternity leave, spend time with the wife. But I'm not sure about that. So he's tricked me once. I don't think he's going to trick me again. I'm taking Kenny Omega to win, whether it's by hook or by crook. I'm taking Omega to win this. It's going to be bloody. It's going to be crazy. John Moxley, this is his realm. But I think this is the perfect time to give him some time off if you can. So give me Kenny Omega to win the exploding barbed wire death match. Wouldn't be shocked if we see one or two new debuts that people are like, wow, and just didn't even think of. That'll be really dope. And I expect someone to come out and challenge Kenny Omega afterwards. And I will go on record now to say I think we see someone from New Japan come out after the match and stare Kenny Omega down. I'm not positive who yet, because I really, what a crazy moment to end a pay-per-view on if you go with the Golden Lovers, right? Like, if you can have Kota Ibushi out there after Kenny Omega goes through this war, he's super heel, you stare Moxley down like you finally did it, and you just have Kota Ibushi come out. Like, what happened to my friend? Where did he go? This isn't you. And you just have him look. And you set up one hell of a match now that this door is open. Man, we can only wish. We'll see. We'll see if that's how it turns out. I'm excited. The pay-per-view, much like NXT TakeOver, like I said, I give them the benefit of the doubt all the time because they rarely let me down. AEW is really good. They're really good at these pay-per-views. Can't wait to watch it. We'll be back Sunday breaking it all down for you. So that'll be our next wrestling show. Dre will be here. I'm sure he'll have things to say. We'll touch on, you know, Lashley and all that on Sunday as well. Thank you guys for joining me solo on this show. I know it's a little change up. Didn't want to leave you guys hanging for too long without a show. So I really appreciate it. Hopefully you guys are out there staying safe, staying mentally aware, and make sure you guys are mentally healthy as well. I know it looks like we're coming towards the end of this pandemic, but we're still in it. I want to make sure everyone is healthy, and when we can go out and we can get back to normal life, we're mentally healthy as well. In the meantime, follow us at @cornerpodcast_ on Twitter. Then you can follow us at Corner Club for Life on Instagram. Check out our other show, Wrestling with Stereotypes, on adfreeshows.com. Shout out to the Mortgage Man for that. Shout out to Blue Wire, the network, all the sponsors, to most importantly, you guys, the fans. The old man will be back on the next show. I appreciate you. But for now, I'm out.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.